Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we take these complex legal cases and try to break them down so they make a little more sense. And today we're going to be looking at a case, a 1980 case, Trimmer v. Van Brommel. Now this case is really interesting because on the surface, it seems pretty simple. But once you start peeling back the layers, it really reveals some really important insights about the line between like personal relationships and, legally binding contracts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for, anybody out there who's in law school or just generally interested in the legal system and how it interacts with everyday life, this case really is a great example of just that. It highlights the need for clarity and agreements. And it also shows like the limits of relying on like unspoken understandings, especially when it comes to, close personal relationships.
Right. So let's set the stage a little bit here. We've got Leonard Trimmer. He's a 67-year-old tour operator. And then we've got Catherine Van Brommel. She is a wealthy widow, reportedly worth over $40 million. So these two meet on a tour that Trimmer's running. And of course, a 5-year relationship develops. But it's what Trimmer says happened during that relationship that really lands them in court.
Yeah, exactly. So Trimmer claimed that Van Brommel, she made him an oral promise, essentially saying that she would support his, I quote here, sumptuous living for the rest of his life. But there was a condition, only if he devoted his time and attention exclusively to her. And based on this promise, Trimmer said that he actually gave up his career, which he described as modest. So, thinking about that, what do you think is the most significant risk that Trimmer took here by relying on this promise?
Well, I mean, giving up a career, any career, that's a big step. But, to do that based just on a spoken agreement in a personal relationship, that seems like a really big gamble to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we don't have the exact details of what his career was like. But still, to just walk away from that.
Yeah.
Based on a promise, that's a huge risk.
Yeah. And it's interesting because during those 5 years, Van Brommel actually did provide a significant amount of financial support to Trimmer. We're talking over $300,000 spent on rent, travel, custom clothing, cars, even a monthly stipend. I mean, it definitely sounds like he was living pretty comfortably, at least during that time.
Yeah, it does. But here's where things get really interesting and where this case really starts to touch on, these legal issues. So when the relationship ends, Trimmer sues Van Brommel, and he's suing her for a whopping $1.5 million. And his argument is that she breached this oral contract, this agreement that they had. And, for me, it raises a lot of questions about just how easily, what might start as just like personal expectations in a relationship can escalate into these really serious legal claims.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you've got a potential $1.5 million payout just hanging on a conversation, essentially. Yeah. So it really does make you think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So how did the court see this? Did they say, yeah, this was a legally binding contract? Or did they look at it and say, no, this is just something that happens in personal relationships?
Well, they definitely leaned towards the latter. Van Brommel's lawyers, they actually filed for what's called summary judgment. Yeah. And basically, they argued that, even if we assume that this agreement existed between Trimmer and Van Brommel, it was just way too vague to actually be enforceable in court. And the court agreed. They ended up dismissing Trimmer's lawsuit entirely. And this actually brings up a really important point for all those law students out there. Courts are very reluctant to even consider cases where the core claim is just too poorly defined to really have any legal meaning.
So the court basically said, we don't even see this as a valid contract to begin with.
Right.
So what were some of the legal reasons for that? Like, what were the specific things that Trimmer, failed to demonstrate or couldn't prove that really led to this outcome?
Yeah, so there were several key legal obstacles in this case. First, while oral contracts, they can be enforceable under the right circumstances. When it comes to these sorts of agreements within personal relationships, particularly when you're talking about long-term financial support, the legal system gets a lot more cautious. The court really scrutinizes these situations to figure out whether was there really a clear intention from both sides to create a legally binding agreement? Or is this just a case of, expectations that kind of naturally develop within a close relationship? Imagine if every casual promise that partners made to each other could suddenly be taken to court. It would really change the whole dynamic of how people interact, wouldn't it?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see how that would lead to a lot of problems. And, I think it's really important to have that higher standard in personal contexts.
Yes.
Because otherwise, like you said, any any little thing could be misconstrued and turned into some sort of legal battle.
Exactly. And that actually brings us to the second big issue here, which is what's called the doctrine of definiteness, sometimes also referred to as vagueness. So the court in this case, they looked at this alleged agreement, the one to support Trimmer's sumptuous living, and they basically said, this is way too vague. Like, what does that even mean from a legal perspective? There was no specific amount of money agreed upon, no schedule for payments, no details about how the support would actually be provided. It was all just really open-ended and kind of nebulous.
Right. So basically, the court couldn't pin down what sumptuous living meant.
Right.
And because of that, they couldn't actually say what Van Bommel was obligated to provide. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. And without that kind of concrete specificity, you know, the court said, essentially, we can't create a contract for the parties. You know, they have to have defined these terms themselves. And the court's role is to enforce contracts that exist, not to invent them.
Right, right. And you mentioned earlier this idea of the relationship being turnable at will.
Yeah.
Can you kind of unpack that a little bit and explain how that played into the court's decision?
Yeah, so the court basically said, look, even if we were to say that there was some kind of agreement here, there's nothing in what Trimmer's claiming that indicates what would happen financially if the relationship ended. You know, either one of them could have decided to end it at any point. And there was no suggestion that Van Bommel would have to continue this financial support indefinitely afterwards. And this, for the law students listening, really touches on a key element of contracts, which is duration. You know, if you're talking about a truly binding, long-term financial commitment, you would typically expect to see some clauses in there about, you know, what happens if the agreement is terminated, what the consequences are.
Right, right. So that was missing here. Now, Trimmer also made what we call a secondary claim in this case. He argued for something called quantum meruit.
Yeah.
So can you break that down for us a little bit? What does that mean and why didn't it work in this specific situation?
Sure. So quantum meruit, it's a Latin term, and it basically translates to as much as he deserves. And it's a legal principle that allows someone to be compensated for the value of services they provided, even if there wasn't a formal contract in place. But there has to be this kind of understanding that payment was expected and that the other party, you know, benefited from those services. In this case, though, the court completely rejected Trimmer's quantum meruit claim.
And I think the main reason they rejected that is it goes back to this fundamental difference between how we approach personal relationships and how we approach, you know, more formal business transactions, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. The court emphasized that there's this strong legal presumption that services exchanged within personal relationships, things like companionship, you know, affection, support, those are typically considered gratuitous. They're given freely out of love, friendship, you know, caring for the other person, not with this expectation of being paid back. You know, think about your own relationships. You don't generally expect to send your friends or family an invoice for spending time with them.
No. And there's a great quote from Justice Greenfield in this case that I think really captures that sentiment. He said, "Friendship, like virtue, must be its own reward."
Yeah, that's a really good one. And the court in this case, they actually made this distinction. They said, look, there are certain services that are just inherent to companionship, you know, things like eating dinner together, having conversations, you know, sharing leisure activities. And then there are other types of services, you know, things that might be outside of that core relationship, things that could potentially be compensated if there was a clear agreement about that. But in Trimmer's case, most of what he was claiming really fell into that first category, you know, things that would naturally arise from just being in a personal relationship with somebody.
So it seems like the court's decision here wasn't just about the specifics of this particular case, but it also touched on some broader public policy concerns. What were some of those underlying worries that the court might have had?
Oh, absolutely. You know, courts, they're generally very hesitant to get too involved in the inner workings of personal relationships, and especially when it comes to creating financial obligations based on those relationships. There's this worry that if they did that too readily, it would open the floodgates to all sorts of frivolous lawsuits from, you know, ex-partners who are just trying to get some money out of a relationship that's ended. And it's not just about avoiding, you know, bogging down the court system. It's also about respecting the autonomy of individuals and recognizing that, you know, relationships are complex. They change, they evolve. And you know, to impose these really rigid, legally enforceable obligations on top of that, it could really distort things. Imagine if every nice thing you did for a partner, every casual promise you made could potentially end up in court. It would really undermine that sense of trust and free exchange that's so important in personal connections.
Yeah, it would definitely create a really strange and maybe even a little bit hostile environment around relationships.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also this issue of privacy. You know, courts don't want to be in the business of scrutinizing every private interaction between couples to try to figure out, like, was there some implicit financial agreement lurking there. You know, it just gets too intrusive. And more fundamentally, there's this concern about what's sometimes called the commodification of personal bonds. You know, this idea that we would reduce, you know, affection and companionship to just financial transactions, unless there's a very clear and explicit agreement that that's what's happening. So this case really highlights the law's attempt to kind of protect the intangible aspects of relationships from being treated solely as economic arrangements.
Yeah. So zooming out a little bit here, what are the key takeaways from Trimmer v. Van Bommel, especially for our listeners out there who are maybe studying law right now? Like, what are the big principles that this case illustrates?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, it just really underscores the importance of having very clear, very specific terms in any kind of agreement, but especially when you're talking about, you know, significant financial commitments. Relying on informal promises, you know, things that are just said in passing, even if they're said with good intentions, it can be very risky from a legal standpoint. So for all you future lawyers out there, this case is a reminder, you know, advise clients to get things in writing, to spell out the details, especially when it comes to money.
Yeah. Yeah. And it emphasizes that difference, right, between, you know, what you might expect in a personal relationship versus what you need to actually create a legally binding obligation. So you can have all those expectations, but if you don't have that clear intent and that very specific agreement, the law isn't necessarily gonna back you up.
Right. And as the court said in this case, the court cannot create contracts where none exists. It can only enforce them. And there's another great quote from the decision that really drives this point home. It says, "To imply an obligation by a wealthy friend to compensate a less wealthy companion stretches the bond of friendship to the breaking point." And I think that really reveals the court's skepticism about turning these acts of generosity into legal debts, unless there's a very clear understanding that that's what's happening.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also a good reminder that just because you've benefited financially from a relationship, that doesn't necessarily mean you're automatically entitled to ongoing support.
Mm-hmm.
As the court put it, there are no guarantees in life, and good fortune, to be enjoyed while it lasts, does not invariably bring with it a lifelong annuity.
Exactly. Trimmer v. Van Bommel, you know, it draws a line, and it says, look, over here, we've got the personal sphere, the world of affection and mutual support. And then over here, we've got the legal world of contracts where things have to be spelled out. There have to be obligations. There has to be a clear intention. And so for law students, remember this case, you know, it's a prime example of how the legal system is hesitant to kind of jump in and turn these informal understandings that we have in our personal lives into legally binding contracts unless the terms are really clear and well-defined.
So the big takeaway for our listeners, you know, if you want those financial agreements, especially within a relationship, if you want those to hold up legally, put it in writing, be very, very detailed. Don't rely on these unspoken assumptions or vague promises about, you know, what the future might hold.
Exactly. Clarity is key in the legal world. Yeah. And this case is a good reminder of what can happen when that clarity is missing, especially when you're dealing with these agreements that come out of personal connections.
This has been a really fascinating deep dive into Trimmer v. Van Bommel. And, you know, I think it really shows how the legal system tries to navigate these really tricky areas where our personal lives and our financial lives intersect.
Yeah, it really does. And I think it leaves us with a really interesting question to ponder. You know, in today's world with relationships changing, with expectations around, you know, money and support and companionship evolving, what kinds of agreements, if any, might we need to start thinking about more explicitly, more clearly, to make sure that we're navigating those complexities in a way that provides more legal certainty? It's something to think about as you continue your legal studies and as you navigate your own relationships out there in the world.
Yeah, a lot to consider. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.